Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we'll discuss year-round E15 and the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement with Nebraska Congressman Adrian Smith. But first, here are this week's headlines. The Agriculture Department is encouraging child nutrition programs to follow the new dietary guidelines. In new guidance to state and regional child nutrition program directors, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins said the department is working on a proposed rule for school meals to focus on incorporating whole foods. Rollins announced the guidance during an event at the Department of Health and Human Services focused on the new dietary guidelines. HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., White House Nutrition Policy Advisor Callie Means, and professional boxer Mike Tyson, among others, spoke at the event. In a Whole Foods push on Capitol Hill, the International Fresh Produce Association distributed 100 boxes of fresh apples, oranges, squash, onions, and tomatoes grown across the U.S. to House and Senate offices with a simple message: you can't make America healthy again without fruits and vegetables. The Agriculture Department will soon open continuous and general signups for the Conservation Reserve Program. The agency will accept offers for continuous CRP between February 12th and March 20th, and general CRP from March 9th through April 17th. USDA said grassland CRP dates will be announced in the near future. The Conservation Reserve Program has capacity for around 1.9 million acres to be enrolled this year. Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Richard Fordyce said small capacity for accepting new acres will make enrollment competitive. The deadline for the E15 Rural Domestic Energy Council to submit a legislative proposal is quickly approaching, but a deal is not in sight. Midwest Republicans made a last-ditch attempt with House leadership to push for the higher ethanol blend fuel in a fiscal 2026 appropriations package last month, but instead came away with a council to study the issue and develop legislation. Ag Committee Chair G.T. Thompson says the provision won't be included in the upcoming farm bill, even if GOP lawmakers can agree on a deal in time. The council had until this Sunday to submit a legislative proposal with the goal of considering the bill by February 25th. We asked Nebraska Congressman Adrian Smith about the status of those discussions and if the council will meet the February 15th deadline.
You know, I think we are making great progress. And, you know, that deadline is a short time frame to really put pressure. And so I think that pressure has been productive. And so hard to say exactly details of a finished product right now. That's not possible. But then, you know, once we formulate this agreement, then we need to put it in bill fashion and then find a vehicle for that to ultimately get passed on the House floor.
Yeah, I spoke with Chairman Thompson last night. He said, you know, this is something that won't be included in the farm bill. But, you know, what kind of must-pass piece of legislation could this attach to?
Well, the must-pass legislation strategy, that probably wouldn't be until the end of the year. I'd like to get this done before that. So we're looking at all of our options right now. And, you know, I think we're building support for it on many fronts. The president's certainly out there in support of E15. And you know, there are some layers of complexity to the issue that really all at the end of the day really point to the fact that farmers want to sell their products. We want to expand those markets. We want to bring consumer choice. And I think that we can really get this done in a way that helps consumers and helps our economy, prevents payments for low prices, low crop prices, hopefully, that we can prevent that need from occurring, because we know that crop prices at their levels right now, it's painful. Producers see this close up and feel it hard. And so we want to bring some relief by ultimately really having the opportunity to sell more product. We know House leadership is very supportive of our efforts. And so we want to get it to the next step.
Yeah, and you mentioned President Trump. He was in Iowa 2 weeks ago now and, you know, mentioned year-round E15 and said it kind of lays in the field of House Speaker Mike Johnson, Senate Majority Leader John Thune, you know, responsible for getting this provision across the finish line. I'm curious, have you been in communication with the president since then? Is this, you know, a signal? Have you received any signals that the president will continue to push for the provision?
Absolutely. You know, the administration, you know, Secretary Rollins and others have been, I think, very direct in their support of this. Certainly the president's comments, as you mentioned, in Iowa. And I think we know by now that when the president says something, he's going to follow through. So that's, I think, really equates to support for broadening the markets for corn and ethanol, and that we can be stronger for it.
Yeah. And are you concerned the Democrats have not been involved in these negotiations of the World Domestic Energy Council? You know, are you concerned that, you know, year-round E15 might lose some of this bipartisan support it has because Democrats haven't been included in some of those negotiations?
Well, I appreciate the support of many Democrats. We are in the context of the way the process of the House works with, you know, Democrats don't vote for Republican procedural motions, basically. So we have to work within that context. And in it's pretty cut and dried in terms of what this ultimate agreement, refineries and biofuels can work out. That it's pretty cut and dried. So I'm happy to you know, interact with Democrats who I believe have voiced their support for E15. And we work to get biofuels. I co-chair the Biofuels Caucus. That's a bipartisan effort. And that has Biofuels Caucus has a lot of input on this. And I appreciate my Biofuels Caucus colleagues and their input along the way.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Some agriculture groups launched a new push to renew the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. We asked Nebraska Congressman Adrian Smith if he's confident the administration will keep the U.S. in the trade pact.
Well, I led the letter of about 100 colleagues to the White House expressing support for USMCA as it relates to agriculture. Agriculture is really the center of USMCA in many ways. And USMCA was an achievement of the first Bush administration, a first term for the president. And, you know, not a lot happened on trade when President Biden was in office. So now we see trade back front and center, and that these are important opportunities that we can pursue.
Yeah, and the USMCA has many benefits for U.S. agriculture as well.
Absolutely. You know, biotech. Biotech was missing from NAFTA. You know, USMCA replaced NAFTA. So when USMCA could include biotech, that's what gave us footing to say to Mexico, you can't shut out our biotech white corn, because in the agreement, you said you would accept these biotech products that ultimately we know are an important part of helping feed the world and in fueling as well. And Mexico agreed to that, and ultimately we did win our that dispute that came up.
Yeah, and I also wanted to get your thoughts. The House voted to overturn the Canada tariffs this week. You know, I'm curious, you specifically, why'd you vote to keep the tariffs on Canada?
Well, I'm not a fan of tariffs. You know, what we saw was a motion by some of my Democrat colleagues to try to set the narrative that is really more politically oriented, politically motivated, than it is about moving the ball down the field toward more open trade. And we know, I would say it's a bipartisan interest of leveling the playing field on trade. For the criticisms from Democrats during the first Trump administration, they did nothing to change that, tariffs themselves, while President Biden was in office. But now with President Trump in office, my Democrat colleagues are back into the groove of opposing tariffs. So, you know, I'm not a fan of tariffs, regardless of who's president. And I really look forward to the opportunity to see what we can do to level the playing field. Fact of the matter is, President Trump has leveled the playing field in many cases, headed us in the right direction with his high priority on trade. So it is my desire that we move forward and shift gears into, you know, fewer trade barriers in tariffs or ultimately trade barriers. So let's move forward in a way where we can sell more of our products and grow our economy at the same time.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Honecke looks at the most recent farm income forecast in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA's forecast for farm earnings this year is expected to remain relatively stable due to larger government payments and a strong cattle sector despite no expected revenue from crops. This chart shows net farm income and net cash farm income adjusted for inflation from 2005 to the forecasted totals for 2026. Net cash farm income is the green line. It's a measure of farmers' cash flow. It's projected at $158.5 billion in 2026, an increase of more than $1.7 billion from last year, keeping profits close to the 20-year average. Net farm income is the blue line. It's a broader measure of profits. It's forecast at just over $153 billion in 2026, which would represent a loss of nearly $4 billion from last year. The combination of ad hoc assistance and changes to commodity programs through the One Big Beautiful Bill Act will shore up farm income. Direct government payments to farmers are expected to soar to more than $44 billion this year, which is an increase of nearly $14 billion from last year. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
Don't miss the must-attend Ag Policy event of the year. Register now for the 2026 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear directly from the leaders shaping the future of agriculture as they explore innovative ideas to strengthen rural economies and guide policy decisions for the year ahead and beyond. The summit takes place March 23rd at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., with a virtual option available. View the agenda and register today at agripulse.com under the Events tab.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Welcome back. There's a new push from ag groups to renew the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement this year. We're joined by Dan Bossy with Ag Resource Company and Jessica Schulkin with the Russell Group on our panel this week. To begin, Dan, what's the impact of the USMCA trade agreement for U.S. agriculture?
Well, it's very big. I mean, if you look at it now, China's taking over a billion bushels of U.S. corn annually. That's a third of our exports, or almost a third. So it's a really big deal. And then as you look to our neighbor to the north, I mean, Canada, it's our largest, one of our largest trading partners. So as you think about USMCA, it's the glue that binds North America together on trade, and we need to keep it going. And I don't know if blowing it up is the right thing to do, but again, at the end of the day, I hope that some kind of deal can be cobbled together.
Yeah, and Dan, the House this week voted to scrap the president's tariffs against Canada. Is the U.S.'s relationship with two of the country's top trading partners, do you think, already on edge, or what do you think it can be salvaged in the USMCA renegotiation this year?
Well, I hope it can be salvaged. I do think we as neighbors should be talking. I do believe that there's pathways forward here. I believe as you stand back from all of this, that there's relationships that have been ongoing for a long time and that it's important that these keep going. Both countries provide impetus economically for each other. And as I look forward, I'm hopeful that, you know, the livestock trade for agriculture, some of the wheat trade persists and that we have a border that is relatively open. We'll leave the presence and the tariffs up to him. But overall, it's very important for, again, our economy and Canada's economy to keep the doors open and keep trade moving each direction.
And also, speaking of Congress, Jessica, I'd like to bring you into the conversation. The House Ag Committee is expected to debate a farm bill later this month with text coming soon. I'm curious what you'll be looking for as that progress progresses. And, you know, could this farm bill really become law?
Sure. Well, and I think a lot of people are excited to see what's coming out. I think what we're all expecting is this farm bill to look a lot like the farm bill that was marked up by Chairman Thompson back in 2024, minus all the provisions that were included in the One Big Beautiful Bill. So probably if passes prologue, a lot of this stuff is going to look familiar. Text should be coming out on Friday. And so we're going to be pouring through that to see what's in there. Some of the sticking points, you know, that we've heard as we talk to some of the Democratic offices, obviously, Ranking Member Craig put out her farm bill outline that she would like to see that would have repealed and or delayed some of the SNAP provisions that were included in the One Big Beautiful Bill. So we need to see whether or not the Democratic side of the aisle really hones in on that, or if they focus on some of the other pieces that are included in the farm bill. Lots of talk, obviously, about moving Food for Peace over to USDA, folks talking about uniform labeling, Prop 12, a number of issues that we have seen before. None of them are new. We don't expect a lot of groundbreaking things here, but hopefully they'll be able to get it done and get it across the finish line in a couple of weeks. And then if all goes well, they can get some time and get it across the House floor. Senate process, much less certain, I think we can say. And so I don't think we can give up hope that they can get it done during this year, but there's certainly a long way to go. And it is an election year, so the timeline's pretty tight.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. The farm economy is struggling. We asked Dan Bossy with Ag Resource Company if he views the downturn as cyclical, or if there are structural issues that could keep market prices down for a longer period of time.
Well, we're losing our export demand. And as I, you know, I'm now celebrating my 47th year in this business. When I came into it, the U.S. Percentage of world trade is upwards of 52%. Today, we're down at 18%. And so our share of global grain trade continues to wane, which is a concern for me. Brazil, Russia, Ukraine, Argentina, just to mention a few names, are structural problems for the United States as they continue to expand. And so as you think about the future ahead, trade is not going to be the driver that it once was. And so we need to think internally to protein and potentially biofuels in terms of being new demand drivers for the American farmer. Trendline yields keep increasing every year. And if we don't find uses for that crop, stocks will get very large as we think about the next couple of years.
Yeah, and you mentioned biofuels there, Dan. I mean, year-round E15 has been a big push, especially the last month, 6 weeks in Congress. I mean, does that even have enough of an impact to move the needle on some of this lost international demand?
Well, you know, I really wanted to have mandatory E15. I appreciate the voluntary and being able to use it year round, but I think at the end of the day, if I can get a 2.6 billion bushel increase in U.S. corn demand, domestically speaking, that's the kind of demand driver that would change the outlook for U.S. agriculture for at least 3 to 4 years. And so that is the focus that I would have. Voluntary E15 blending all year round may increase it by, let's call it 100 to 300 million bushels, helpful, mind you, but not a panacea to get us to a new level of a crop usage rate that would change the balance sheets enough to get us bullish. So as I stand back from it, I like E15, but I don't want to spend a lot of political capital going for a voluntary program. I really would like to get something mandatory as we look further down the road.
Jessica, I want to get your thoughts. An E15 World Domestic Energy Council was established to look at this issue. Chairman Thompson says it's something that won't go into the farm bill, but you know, I'm curious if you could update us on some of those negotiations, where the process is at, and potentially the future of the provision.
Sure. So the the council is supposed to have their legislative text out by Sunday. So everybody's waiting to see what that's going to say and if they can find some sort of balance between small refiners and larger refiners. The biofuel folks are sort of stuck in the middle there. And it won't be in the farm bill. Legislatively, the timeline to really get anything passed additionally, you know, is tight. There was an effort to try to get, obviously, this language included in the last funding bill. That did not happen at the last second. The president has indicated he would like to see year 15 or year round E15 and is supportive of that. And so, you know, we'll see what they come out with on Sunday. The tricky part is even if they are able to come up with a deal, and it doesn't really feel like that has happened yet, is what are they going to attach it to? You now have the Homeland Security Appropriations Bill that's tied up in all sorts of political strife. The funding for that runs out on Friday, and we're not sure what's going to happen with that. And that's going to be the last funding bill of the year. And beyond that, if it's not on the farm bill, there's really a limited amount of legislation that you can attach this to, even if a bill is agreed upon, and we're not to that point yet. So I don't think the prospects are great. There are a lot of smart people putting a lot of good work into this. And so, you know, hope springs eternal, I guess.
Yeah, and Jessica, as a wrap up here on that same note, House and Senate Ag Committee leaders have said that, you know, additional farm aid is needed and kind of eye potentially a supplemental funding bill to enact that, but timeline's still unclear. You know, you've worked on a lot of those types of bills during your career. You know, I'm curious, you know, what are the odds of that actually happening, of additional farm aid coming this year?
Yeah, you know, nothing is impossible. I think it's certainly going to be, it's necessary. If you just look at the data coming out of USDA, farm income is projected to be down next year again. Farm debt is projected to be up. Bankruptcies, the Farm Bureau just put out information that bankruptcies last year topped 300. So the need is there, and farmers are really squeezed right now trying to decide whether, frankly, in a lot of cases, if they even want to stay, you know, in business and keep doing what they love to do. It runs into the same issue. There's a lot of people, Chairman Bozeman, Mr. Hovind, Senator Hovind, have been working along with others saying this is something that needs to happen for a while. You have all of the commodity groups. They recently wrote to all of the members of Congress saying, look, you know, we're grateful for some of the things that were done in the One Big Beautiful Bill, but it's not enough. We really, even with farm aid, it doesn't cover all the losses that farmers are facing. And so the story is there. The narrative is there. It's the devil is in the details and just the opportunities to get things passed. Once the Homeland Security bill is done, we'll see if that potentially, you know, maybe it can be a driver to get a farm bill done later this year. That's certainly probably the most likely option, but it is going to be a heavy lift. I mean, you're talking about, you know, billions and billions of additional dollars. You have a very, very tight House margin. Folks that don't want to spend a lot more money, it's hard to get anything through the House right now. A Mother's Day resolution, we like to say, would be difficult to get through. And so, you know, the need is there. I think the administration would like to be as helpful as they can, but there's just not a lot of opportunity to get things passed.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Hunneke looks at states that could gain or lose congressional seats in 2030. And this week's Map It Out.
The number of congressional members that represent each state is redistributed every decade after the census. This map shows the current projections of the states that will gain and lose congressional seats in 2030. The American Redistricting Project based these estimates on assuming recent growth rates continue until 2030. This would be the result. As of now, Texas is expected to gain 4 seats, while Florida is expected to gain 2. 5 other states are expected to gain a seat. California is expected to lose 4 seats, while 8 other states are expected to lose a seat. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Don't miss the must-attend Ag Policy event of the year. Register now for the 2026 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear directly from the leaders shaping the future of agriculture as they explore innovative ideas to strengthen rural economies and guide policy decisions for the year ahead and beyond. The summit takes place March 23rd at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., with a virtual option available. View the agenda and register today at agripulse.com under the Events tab.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south, and it blew that way, and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we start lambing. and I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate will be in recess next week, and USDA's annual Ag Outlook Forum will take place Thursday and Friday. And be sure to mark your calendars and register for the AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit on March 23rd in Washington and streaming virtually. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.